it's Nicole Brandon, and welcome to Unlimited Life. We have such a special and extraordinary show for you today. When we created Unlimited Life, it was our deepest desire to bring to you the top experts around the world that had the keys, the secrets, the tools, and the techniques to really living an unlimited life, an unbridled life, to have the kind of life that you always dreamed of and desired and knew that you deserved, and how you open those windows and doors and those pathways and gateways to having the energy and the life, and the presence and the glory and the bliss and all of the things that your deepest heart was desiring. And today's guest embodies all of that energy and all of that light. Today we are speaking with the cherry on the sundae as we talk about embodying presence. Today we are talking with a beautiful woman, a beautiful energy, a beautiful light known as presence. And she's going to share with us her work and how you can open your heart, your spirit and soul to those higher realms of consciousness to really unleash and live the kind of life you always knew you dreamed of, desired and deserve. So Presence, welcome to the show. It is such a gift having you here with us today.
Well, thank you so much, Nicole. I'm honored to be here.
Well, I wanted to ask you, because you do so many things, and to see you, I mean, you are such a radiant light. Every time I'm around you, there is something so gleeful in me. It's like my little heart is doing cartwheels just being around you. The energy and the light is so wonderful, truly. You're just amazing. And I always love to ask my guests the did you know factor. Like when you were a little girl, when you were 6 or 7 or 8 and other people wanted to be Miss America or a mom or a princess or whatever, veterinarian, did you always have a gift for being able to help and heal people and reach out? Or was this something that came upon you later on in life that you saw or manifested or fell into?
Well, first I wanted to say thank you for the generous and kind introduction, and I think you exude that energy too, which is why you spot it in other people. But as far as my own childhood, I know from an early age, I don't remember it all that well, but my mom said that I used to get up when I was 2 or 3 years old in the middle of the night, and I would tell her about the universe and the galaxies and all the angelic realms and things that I saw and how I thought it would, certain things that I thought would help the world. So I guess there was some awareness at an early age of that, although I don't remember much of this. She said she wishes she had recorded these conversations. But I know that from an early age, I also felt like I didn't quite belong here. I think I remember feeling that I had made some kind of an agreement to be here to help something, and I had no idea what I had signed up for, and I changed my mind and I wanted to go back home. I kind of remember looking up at the stars and sometimes crying and thinking, gosh, am I crazy? Because I would know that where I lived, and yet I'd have this very strong sense of some kind of other space or other place or other group that I belonged to that had a much higher, more gentle, more kind and loving consciousness, And I somehow had trapped myself in this body and in this world, in this experience of the world. And I wanted to renege my agreement to come down here to help out.
I understand completely.
I was like, wait a minute. I had no idea what I signed up for. I don't know. No. You don't understand. So that was probably, that was not necessarily saying that I was in that space to begin with as far as a healing energy, but my mom was quite ill when I was young. She had some mental issues and also physical issues that made it very difficult for her to function, and so I became sort of conscious of trying to help her. But what I think was different, even though I think there was some psychological programming in that, which we all can go through if we have parents and we become the parents of our parents at an early age. But I also think there was always a sense that I had sort of looked over her when she was a child, because often she would share stories and I could see it very visually. And I had a sense that I somehow had watched her as a child and I wanted to help her. And so if you believe in the whole thing of incarnations and choosing your parents, which some people do, some people don't, I had a particular experience
Sorry about the noise here. I'm thinking I may have to move again. I had a particular experience that made me think that perhaps I had been there when she went through a lot of this and made a choice to come in to try to help. And then she worked, she did a lot of work on herself as being a healer herself. My father was a naturopathic doctor and also a Catholic priest, actually, a missionary.
Wow.
And so both of them had that element of both healing themselves. Both of them were given 6 months to live independently at different times in their lives, and both of them survived way, 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 way beyond those 6 months. I mean, years and years and years and years after. My mom is still alive. My father did pass away. But, and so I think there was some of that gift that may have been passed down. I remember being in high school, or before high school, my mom would teach me when I started getting my cycle, I think around age 12 or so, and I would get these very severe cramps, and she would show me how to make the cramps go away, the pain go away, and that became sort of a normal thing for me then. And since I could do it for myself, I figured I could do it for others. So then I started trying to make physical pain go away. If anyone had pain, I would say I can make that go away. And I didn't even think of it as a gift of healing or as something that I, you know, I didn't think of it that way. It was just something I did for myself. So I figured I could do it for others, and it seemed to work. And then in college, I got kind of known for that. Like people would say, oh, go to see her. She knows how to make pain go away. And it started more, my focus was more on physical pain. And then I also became a massage therapist because that's what my mom did. So I started doing a lot of similar work at an early age. And then I would do work that was not really just massage. I called it massage, but things would happen that were not massage. and more unusual things happened, which I would be in awe of and not understand as much as the people that sometimes would come to see me, like people shaking on the table or having emotional releases, or, you know, someone with cancer, stage 4 cancer, the cancer would go away, or, you know, things that I thought, how is this? I know I didn't do this. So I think then I became aware that there's definitely, that we are all conduits and channels, and we can bring through an energy with intention if we set ourselves up for that, if we intend for the highest good for someone and to be a channel for that, that it
I
can allow that.
That
energy to come through. So
it's beautiful. And
I
just wanted to ask you really quickly, I'm sorry for interrupting you, but I just wanted to ask you really quickly,
please,
as you talk about your college days and people coming to you as a healer, Did you meet other people that were like you? Did you meet other energy workers or light workers?
Oh, yes.
Or
oh, yes.
Mentors or people that you can connect with that understood your talent and your gifts?
You know, to a certain degree, I think in the beginning, because I did not recognize what I had, and there's probably still some of that to this day. It's kind of a little bit of a throwing your pearl before swine. Not saying that there was swine that I was working with, but like I remember being, you know, quite young. I think when I was like 15, 16, and when I got married around age 18, I would see, and I wasn't a citizen yet, and I didn't have a green card, so I would do massage work. I would call it massage, and I'd work on someone for maybe 3 or 4 hours and charge $10. And the people that I did that with paid that. So it wasn't until later with certain clientele that people insisted on paying me more. But that tells you of the kind of, like, for me, if someone gave me a 3 or 4 hour massage and poured their heart and soul into it and did healing work on me, and I would give them more than $10. So that tells you something about the type of people I was attracting as far as who I was working on. Then I also, you know, would have a lot of the men would then say, well, here's the $10, now $400 extra, would you give me a hand job as well, you know, kind of thing. So that tells you I wasn't really choosing my clientele very well.
Wow.
So it took a while for me to value my services. And it actually took one of my clients that came to see me regularly and had recommended people. actually a few clients. I had a few clients like that. But one of them at one point said to me, you know, I'm embarrassed paying you as much as you're asking. It feels bad to me. I feel bad about myself paying you this amount. Please raise your prices, at least with me. And that was like a what? It was such a like different concept. And then she said, please throw out something you think is completely outrageous and just throw it out and just go for something outrageous. Because the first number I came with, I think she still didn't feel very comfortable with. So I threw out something I thought was completely outrageous. And she, without flinching, said, okay, and wrote the check for it. And then after that, I started raising my prices. And what was interesting, I attracted different people. And it did make, I still would see people at a lower fee. You know, some people who couldn't afford it, I would still see people. I'd take a certain amount of people. But someone suggested, take a percentage, and once that fills up, don't take any more. And make sure you see some people who pay, you know, full price. And because I had had several people who had experienced what they called miracles, I was referred a lot of high-end clients, and many of the people that would refer them would tell them what the price was, because they knew if they asked me what the price was, I would give them something different.
Right.
So it was a very interesting experience in value and how we assign what we assign value to and how people treat you based on that. I mean, we teach the universe how to treat us by how we treat ourselves, and what we tell people is okay. So, you know, I had no consciousness about that for many, many years. So I don't know if I answered your question. I probably roundabout it, but maybe
you,
I didn't.
You absolutely answered it beautifully. And so
probably over-answered it.
So no, it was perfect. So that so beautifully feeds in, because I know that for myself, I always consider myself a kaleidoscope. And I've had a kaleidoscope on my desk since I was very young. Somebody gifted me a kaleidoscope,
because
that's how I would always share. That's who I was. And I always felt like, depending on the moment, or that second, or that breath, that the way that I was expressing myself, it was just a different picture, but the same energy source was the same. And I always looked at life or energy like a chandelier, that you have divine source. And then each person was an individual bulb in the chandelier, and some people, their bulbs maybe burn out, but we're all connected to divine source.
Right.
And
exactly,
so I always looked at it that way. And when I look at, you know, all of the work that you do, it is such a beautiful tapestry of colors and energy and light. And so the tools and the techniques that you use, that you're talking about healing and you're talking about channeling and you're talking about massage. And so did one thing open first? I mean, I know you're a Reiki master and an energy healer, and that you teach meditation. And so was there something that spark in your soul that just burst you open, and that from that all the other talents and gifts just started to blossom as well?
Well, it's more, you know, I'm often a believer that some of the areas, and by the way, when you speak about yourself being a kaleidoscope, that so fits who you are. You have this magical way about you that reminds me of a kaleidoscope in the most beautiful spiritual sense. So I thought that was really, really appropriate, and it really fits how I see you. So I thought that was magical you shared that. And I always loved kaleidoscopes myself. But I would say I'm definitely very multiversed in many areas. Kind of, I used to say Jane of all trades, master of none. But but I think ultimately, if we're always a beginner, if you know, ultimately, I think if we really want to master anything, we always have to be a beginner. I mean, if we lose our humility, we lose our ability to learn and to continue to grow in that arena. And I think, if anything, I think what opened me up the most is being an allowing myself to be an open channel. I even when I used to play piano, I would, you know, focus on playing people's core energies, and people would have these amazing experiences. And I really felt like it was just being an open channel. If I learned anything, if I want to continue to learn and be, my ultimate prayer is always, let me be a clear and perfect channel. Let me, you know, not obstruct the energy that can come through, because we all have access to that universal energies, that universal light and wisdom and grace and all of those things, if we don't interfere with it, if we don't, you know, obstruct it anyway. I think mine, in a way, started actually with more of my creative, in the creative world, because my mother, because she was a single mom, basically grew up a single mom. We lived in a lot of communities. She sought out a lot of unusual tapestries of experiences. We lived in Vienna at one point in an alternative psychodrama community. It was kind of like a psychodrama community where people would act out their darkest demonic sides of themselves and their greatest
dreams.
Seriously? And,
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, and in some ways though, the idea was to become authentic. And in some ways, I really latched onto that, and it became more of a performance piece for me. I would use it in a comedic way. I would do pieces that were more, even political sometimes. I mean, I would feel the energies around, and I would act out that. So I used the format somewhat, but I turned it sort of into my own. So my initial entry into that was really a form of channeling energies around me, because I was very, at an early age, very attuned to, and partially probably because of the environment that I was in, the parents that I had, but I had I was very attuned to what was happening around me. And then that translated in the healing when I used to work as a healer, which I actually took a step back from when I had my own healing crisis and needed to focus on my own healing. But I think that's what opened me up to being able to help people. And I even did the issue is sometimes I didn't know how to shut it off. So something would come in and I would feel like I was in tune with, I could step into a room and I would feel somebody's headache, and then I'd have to find the person who has the headache and I'd work on them because I could feel it in my own head. So there was no separation. Like you said, there was no separation between us. And I entered into a field where I couldn't tell the difference between where someone else began and where I ended. That made me a great healer, but it also made for, if you don't have really good boundaries and awareness that we still live in a world where we have to use separation and time and space and all of that to function, then it becomes a little unmanageable, which is why I had many times where I would step out of doing that work for a time, because I recognized that I didn't have a shut-off valve. It was like it was always open.
That's incredible. So, I went to an inner child workshop once, and it was the most daunting experience of my whole life, because all of the people that were there, like you're saying, were acting out the pain, the drama, the trauma, whatever that was, and I felt bad that I had a beautiful childhood. I felt almost embarrassed to share my magic or my happiness or my gifts. And at one point they gave us paper and a pen and said that we should write out our boundaries. And I didn't even know what a boundary was. I didn't. I mean, if you asked me, I had no definition for boundaries. I just stared at the paper for a really long time and clueless. Absolutely. I came back and said, there aren't boundaries between states. I have no idea what a boundary is. And then the next day they had these like rubber things and they were pounding on chairs and sofas and screaming. And I went back and I said, can I write boundaries? But I still had no idea what it was. So I so appreciate when you're saying, you weren't sure where you ended and somebody else began. And as you talk about channeling, being that clear entity and that being and allowing that, one of my questions I wanted to ask you was that I remember seeing something about dust channeling.
Yes. Oh, I love that you asked me about that, because that's something I very rarely talk about. And that purest form of connecting with that energy in a wise and guided way. Gus came into my life when I was doing, interestingly enough, which is similar to what I do with the sacred singing, but I was doing musical healing circles with a friend of mine. I recorded and we did a lot of concerts together. He was sort of a new age musician. And we would do these workshops where we would sing into people or make up songs with whatever they were healing. And one of the things I was also going to say earlier is very often I find that where our gifts come forward, where we discover that, is usually where our wounds are, where we've had the greatest wounding. But those are the areas where we also find how we can bless ourselves and each and the world around us if we in the process of healing that for ourselves. And then usually that's a strength that, that we can then provide for other people. So I was in this workshop and it was before I went I actually went to an MA program for spiritual psychology, but it was before I went into that program, before I had taken any college classes in psychology, maybe shortly after, but I started we would do these circles, and my friend had this teddy bear sitting on the shelf, and it had a bandana on and some sunglasses and a lot of dust. And I thought, you know, that teddy bear is not going to good use. It's just hanging there, and it's collecting dust, and he clearly has no connection with it. So I asked him, could I use that teddy bear just to, you know, kind of lighten up the mood, because I think there was a lot of emotional energy going on and someone was kind of stuck in something. So he said, sure, take the teddy bear. And I started kind of playfully working with the person that was in this process by making the teddy bear talk in kind of a dopey voice. And it was kind of like, you know, it's more like that kind of like, you know, not a wise bear, but more like a dopey bear. And but he had a great sense of humor, and I think it was a way of almost channeling my comedian, which I had sort of lost touch with a little bit because I was very comedic-based at an early age. So he was very funny, and it lit up the space in the room, and everyone kind of laughed, and the person got out of their space, and it really created a very loving atmosphere. And then people, because of the crowd that we were in, started asking some different questions, like what's the meaning of life, and you know, different kind of more in-depth questions that they expected a funny answer to. And the teddy bear would give a funny answer, but it was almost like it was very, sometimes it was funny, but there would be a very astute kind of observation of the person and where they were at specifically, beyond what I was expecting to do. Like I thought, well, maybe I'm just counseling and using a little comedy, but some of the answers were not what I... They were very in the moment, kind of like a kaleidoscope, you know, they would be in a way that I wasn't expecting. And it was so well received that we thought we'd start to incorporate it in all the different workshops and concerts and musical healing circles we did. And then it shifted. It got to a, there was something that started to happen with it. Guskus's voice became more, it changed. It had almost like an Indian accent to it. And his voice was different, and his quality was different, and the space that he would take me into was different. And even my vision started to change when I started to talk in groups or to people. And then people actually asked for, believe it or not, having one-on-one sessions, which I thought was hysterical when I first heard, you want to have a one-on-one with a teddy bear? Are you serious? But people did. And some of the most extraordinary things would happen. And there would be things that I would know about people, but there was no way for me to know that. I never really considered myself fully psychic, but I would say I've had intuitions, but not so clearly that I would know things. And with Guskus, it would just be almost like he knew exactly where they were at. And it was in some ways, whether it was my consciousness or not, I don't know. But it definitely took me into a different space. This very heart-opening space would happen. I would feel this field of loving energy, and my vision would change. I would see people more as like an energy form rather than a physical form. Like I said, I would know something about someone. And some of the answers he would give, like there'd be certain questions that would be asked, I might have had a different answer, and the answer that would come out was not what I expected. And sometimes I would know inside of me, I would hear the answer that he had for the question they were asking, and he would not answer, he would not put it out. He would ask them something, like I would say, well, what, they're asking about this, why don't you just tell them? And it'd be like, nope, that's not what's going to happen here. So the difference between that and some of the way I was working before, I'd say before I was more of a wild healer. I know that a lot of people felt that I saved their lives and that they had these miracle breakthroughs. And while that might have been true, there was a bit of a lack of guidance as to what degree to help someone and how to help them. Where with Guskus, it was very clearly defined, this is what they're ready for, this is what we're going to say, It was like a, but it was like from a very wise and guided place. And it was an unusual experience. And then when I would meditate, sometimes I would sit with the teddy bear and I would feel these inner shifts happening very, very, very subtly. It was just an extraordinary experience. It was something I never would have expected. And at the same time, thought it was completely insane that here I am channeling with the teddy bear. And the teddy bear would always say to people, please look at the teddy bear eyes. Don't look at my eyes. Because I'd be kind of like a bad ventriloquist, you know, using this voice, moving the teddy bear's arms and moving my lips at the same time. So not a good ventriloquist at all, but yet asking people to look at the teddy bears if the teddy bear was talking. But what that created was a, one, they didn't associate it with me, and they were looking at it, and obviously at an object that's not necessarily alive. It's being alive, enlivened with energy. But what that did is it brought people back to themselves. The tendency, I think, in our culture is that people tend to look to a person to either heal them, to guide them, to be their leader, to, and often the people who end up being our leaders are the people who are, in some ways, the most egotistical, maybe charismatic, possibly, hopefully, intelligent, but don't always have our best interest in mind and in heart, and want to step into that position of power. So often people tend to disempower themselves by giving that energy over to someone, which often happened with me as a, in the healer role. Very often people would do that. And what happened with the teddy bears is because they were looking at the teddy bear, it stopped that from happening. Because it also allowed people, I think, to get in touch more with their inner child, because you can't really look at a teddy bear and take it all too seriously.
That's so beautiful, and it's so extraordinary that you said that right now, too, because maybe about a week ago, 10 days ago, I was at an event, a Master Souls conference. And I stayed at a friend's house, and they said, you know, I'm not going to be there, but I'll set up the guest room for you and just come on in. And I went in and found the guest room, and they had piled all these stuffed animals onto the bed, just like I was a little girl. They were all these stuffed animals. And as I slept, surrounded by all these stuffed animals, there was a little frog I was really drawn to. And in the morning, I said to my friend, thank you so much for, you know, all of the little animals last night. That was so cute and so wonderful to sleep, you know, amongst all these little stuffed animals. I said, and what a special little frog. And he said to me, are you familiar with the Hoffman process? And I said, yes. And he said, oh, well, the frog has been to the Hoffman process. And lots of tears have been crying to that frog. And he's counseled many people. And I know that he just needed some uplifting and understanding of his energy. So I thought that, you know, he would be happy to be with you last night.
Right.
And it's so funny because of all of the stuffed animals, that was the one I connected with. And so I just knew immediately.
Object. Yeah, it immediately, you know, energy is, it does, objects do bring energy into them. I think we conduct energy more effectively because we're alive and it runs through us in that regard. But even an inanimate object, as you know, you can be animated or can be enlivened in that regard. So yeah, you picked up on that clearly. It makes perfect sense.
And
I was in an acting class once. I was just going to tell you this quick thing. And it's actually when I was 17, and I was taking yoga with Bikram at the time when nobody knew what yoga was. I would say yoga, and they'd say yogurt, and nobody knew what it was. But it was very funny. And Bikram had all these celebrities in class, and actually one of my patients or one of my clients that I had worked with had bought me this as a thank you for the session I had with him. And he was one of the people who actually wanted to have me do a hand job, but then because of his experience completely shifted out of that to a completely different person, which was really actually a cool thing, which made me also realize, you know, that if people get connected with more high vibrational things, they might move out of that lower consciousness arena, because really ultimately we all want to resonate on a higher level. But anyway, I was in Beverly Hills, and I had just come out of the class, and I was throwing some trash that I found on the street in the garbage can. And as I was throwing it in, I saw this little white rabbit with pink, you know, kind of these pink eyes. And it wasn't much to look at. It didn't look really super adorable. It was just sort of this very simple, plain white rabbit, but it was not dirty. Like, it clearly had just been put into the garbage can, and nothing had really polluted it. Like, it wasn't, you know, it was still white, and it was apparently just put in there. And I thought, well, that doesn't belong in here, so I pulled that out. And then I was in an acting class, and we were supposed to become an object in our house. And I became this white rabbit, which I had planned to just give to a child. I didn't have much of a connection with. I thought it was kind of, it didn't have a very strong cute factor, and I could understand why somebody maybe threw it away. But it was fascinating because it was so plain and simple. But when I became that object, that bunny became magical. It had this zen-like feeling about it. It was such a teaching about how we judge things based on how they look on the outside. And I was looking kind of in a little bit of for the glitz to capture me. And this bunny rabbit had none of that. But what it did have is that real, real sacred and beautiful simplicity. It wasn't showing off in any way. It was just very simple and very plain. It was a magical experience when I came that bunny, and I actually ended up calling it my Zen bunny. It was a real kind of a awakening for me. And I don't remember if that was before or after Gus Gus, but I think that was the first time I sort of made a connection with a bunny rabbit. And what was interesting is before I had that experience and I dissociated the bunny rabbit that way, people who would see the rabbit in my room before, because I hadn't found anyone to give him to yet, and no one wanted him either. No one had any connection with him. But after I did that, and after I connected with him that way, and he became like this magical, you know, object in my room, everyone had a connection with him. So it is interesting, you know.
That's incredible. Sorry, and, you know, when you talk about being a no, I love it. When you talk about being a ventriloquist for the bunny and being the voice for the bunny and sharing these emotions, and I absolutely love that. And then you mentioned when you were talking about Duskas that you were doing some sort of a circle, a singing circle or a vocal circle, mm-hmm. and that's how it came about. And so I know that you have these amazing sacred singing circles. And so taking that vibration of speaking for an energy or a light or a vibration to its highest realm and level. And I would love you to share a little bit about that because I think that's just astounding.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting, thank you. What's interesting is I was doing a lot of, I had lived in India when I was 8 for a short time. My mom was with a spiritual teacher there who actually, he's one of the people responsible for one of my many names, or series of names, I should say, because he named me Ma Anand Tarika, which means a blissful shining star, and Ma or Swami is sort of the word that usually is only given to a spiritual teacher, but he was trying to empower his disciples. And I was only 8 years old, so it was really more of my mom's thing, but I did really have a strong connection with him. And I also had what they call Darshan, where he does like a blessing with him while he was still alive. At the time, he was considered the sex guru. He was called Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh. And then he changed his name later to Osho, and now he's actually revered. It's very interesting because he's one of those teachers who was frowned upon very negatively and got a lot of negative publicity. And now people, you know, revere him in many circles, which is so fascinating. But again, I digress. But but when
no,
I was
not, you're not digressing. Living, you're expanding.
Okay. Well, when I was living in India, that's when I first kind of got awakened to, because I find music to be extremely powerful. The songs that we listen to, the things that we sing, you know, when you think of commercials, I mean, they go into our heads. They are much more effective than repetitively saying an affirmation, whether it's a negative or a positive one, over and over again. But when you add music, it really goes into a much deeper place, especially when there's, you know, connection with that and emotional connection, which is why I think in some ways codependent love songs are so destructive, because they're glorifying, you know, insecurity and codependency, and you know, they don't really help us live healthy, functional adult relationships. So, but I had started doing some kirtan, which is Sanskrit, at an early age. And then I also became aware of more positive lyric music, which I resonated with much more so. And many years ago, when I had an opportunity for a record contract, the producer that was working with me, because I didn't really value my own songs very much at that time, I wanted to do someone else's songs. And the producer that was attached to the record contract had all these songs that he wanted me to sing, but they were all lyrically things that were not empowering. And
so we just lost her for a minute, and I know she'll be back in just a second. What an amazing guest. I mean, imagine being 2 years old and sharing with your mom the secrets of the universe. Imagine growing and knowing that you have the ability to heal people, to take away pain, to take away hurt, to be in college and to be known as the healer, the light being, the joyful one. And so just what a tremendous gift. And I was just talking about extraordinary you are as we had you back here. But just, it was just listening to your story, talking about when you were two and telling your mom about the secrets of the universe. I mean, I love who you are so much.
Thank you. Well, I have to tell you, it comes at a price. You know, it comes at a price. I've had some extraordinary experiences in my life, extraordinary spiritual awakenings and experiences, and also extraordinary times of darkness. And the sacred singing, really, to make a long story short, really grew out of, I had had a very powerful Kundalini awakening that was so intense. And actually, ironically, at the time I was doing what I was trying to do global healing work, because I had decided that just working with one person at a time wasn't really enough. It wasn't making the difference I thought it needed to make. And through a number of circumstances, which I won't go into all the details of, I did some global healing work. And really, in a way, I think I was lacking a bit of humility because I really bit off more than I could chew. Now, while I was channeling these really powerful energies, and it was quite powerful for the group that I was working with, and life-changing for all of us, actually, I was kind of using my body as the way to bring it through. And again, to make an already long story shorter, I ended up having, it started to happen during meditation. I had this energy go up my spine, which literally felt like a fire hose. It was hot and it was painful. It was so much pressure that it was pushing up my spine up to the top of my head, and it was so intense that a lot of times I would just have to lay down. And I became also very psychic. I had a lot of visions of things that were going to be happening on the planet, some of which have happened, some that haven't yet. Maybe they won't, but it was a very interesting and unusual and powerful time. And it got so extreme that I closed my healing practice. I stopped working with clients. I stopped a lot of my community activities that I was involved with, doing women empowerment circles and doing a lot of circle work, a lot of things that I was doing. I had founded an organization with another woman called Institute for Spiritual Entertainment Los Angeles. I stopped doing that. We had a pretty big membership, and I pretty much had to stop everything in my life just to be with what was happening. And I think, you know, often what happens is there's like a roto-rooter experience. It was clearing out a lot of debris in my spine. In the process, it triggered a lot of my childhood trauma that I had repressed. And I became, I would say a close to psychotic break, and really became very low functioning, and was diagnosed with PTSD. And, you know, it was quite a difficult time for me. It took me a long time to reach out for help because I was not used to being in the position of having to be helped. I was more comfortable in the position of helping. So it took me a while to get over my pride to actually reach out. But in the process of that, I went through sort of a monastic period for a number of years where I really withdrew a lot. And my entry back into the world or into the community and my service back into the community was through the sacred singing, which was something that I had kind of done some devotional music many, many years prior, and some affirmations and etc. cassette to music. I'd done many years prior, but I had never thought to do it in the LA area. And then a friend of mine had a birthday party, and she said, you know, could you do that for my birthday? It would be really nice if you could guide one of these for my birthday, because she knew that I did that. And I had never done it in L.A., so I thought, well, why not? You know, all her friends are going to be there. I'll invite a few more. We had about 30 people show up, and it was such a beautiful experience that people said, can we do this every week? And I thought, well, you know, every week is probably a lot, but maybe once a month. And then it kind of became organically. It was like once a month we would do it at somebody's house. And then it grew and grew and grew to sometimes we outgrew the space, and so we would go into a slightly bigger house, and a slightly bigger house where it eventually ended up hiring musicians, and it just sort of evolved and grew. But the intention with it was to use a vehicle, because I think when people are entertained, they are most receptive to healing or shifting or transforming. If they're engaged in the process of transformation and healing, if they're participating in that process and they're empowered in that process, then it's even more powerful. So my intention when I do sacred singing is really to create a healing and sacred space where everyone can access that for themselves. We were creating it together, and I'm really just sort of the facilitator of that experience, of that process, and holding the space for it to happen, and setting up the environment that nurtures it through musical instrumentation, you know, through setting up harmonies that are simple and easy to follow. And for me, it was a very healing thing that I needed for myself as well, because when I went through I lost sight of all the things that I thought I knew spiritually, all the insights that I thought I had. I mean, that's when we really get to know, really, are you a metaphysician? Are you walking the path? Because it's one thing to talk it. It's another thing to really apply it when you're going through the depths of what some people might call hell, you know? It's self-created or outwardly manifesting as well, whatever that means to you. And using affirmations in a musical and prayers in a musical way, and choosing to I think of it as blessings. You know, kind of we're invoking those blessings for ourselves, for each other, for the planet. For me, that's what my intention was when I started doing the sacred singing. And initially we called it devotional singing, and then because people associated that with kirtan, I changed it to sacred singing. And then we also started doing it at bedside, which I had already been doing because I was doing hospice volunteer work. So a lot of the people in our community that come to the sacred singing that then learn the songs, sometimes if they're interested, we call upon them to sing the people who are compromised in their health or possibly in the process of dying and crossing over. Because the voice is a very powerful medium to acknowledge that luminal space that people go into when they're ready to cross over. And you have to have a certain sensitivity, and the vibration has to be very high if you want to support that being in that process.
Wow, that's so beautiful. And you used an expression, kirtan. For those that are new to that expression, can you share what that is?
Yeah, I mean, someone else probably could describe it better, but it's sacred. Sanskrit is a sacred language. It's been around, I think, for hundreds and possibly thousands of years. It's been a long time. I don't know. Haven't studied all the details. I just know what it is and how it influences the body and the mind and the being. Traditionally known in the Hindu tradition from India, it's a language that actually supposedly doesn't. It's one language I actually really want to learn. I've been wanting to find a teacher or go to school to learn it, because apparently it doesn't have any negative or negative words in it at all. It's all, and most of the words used are considered sort of seed sounds or vibrationally high sounds that when they're repeated, they create a certain dynamic because they've been used with the intention of resonating with these different deities. In the Hindi tradition, they believe in different deities, which is different forms of God. There's Lakshmi, which is considered the goddess of abundance. You know, there's some people know what about Krishna, which is mostly the Hare Krishnas have made very famous. There's Vishnu, there's Brahma, there's all these different gods and goddesses that have different Durga, I think, who's one of the goddess of destruction, and they worship these different deities, which is just different energies and forms. And then the Sanskrit words or the chants have a particular purpose. Like one of the ones that I sometimes do at sacred singing, I call on Ganesh, who's the god he works with Lakshmi, and he's the goddess of removing obstacles. So sometimes my ultimate intention actually with the sacred singing is to find more musicians and songwriters or people who want to work together collaboratively to bring together all the sacred languages, not just Sanskrit from Hindi, but also from the Jewish tradition, also from the Arabic traditions, because there are some beautiful chants. I worked with a Sufi teacher for many years, and they use these amazing chants that put you in an altered state. I mean, it's just a beautiful, peace-loving state. And, you know, unfortunately, I think religion and a lot of these spiritual traditions have been fought. People have fought with each other over them, and it's so ironic that we kill each other over God, you know, in a way. The idea is that, you know, we want to live spiritual lives, and yet we so many religions are guilt with different holidays, or even, you know, more wars are fought over religion than anything else, and it's just crazy. And my intention is to bring together these different traditions and these different sacred languages with the English affirmations, and overlay them together so that we can start finding the world connection within those, because all of these traditions, all of these religions have an element to them that attracts people to them, that is a place where we all meet. We don't have to fight over, because they lead us to the same place. It may be a different path, but it all, ultimately, the idea is that it guides you to the highest form of connection with spirit, whatever that, or the highest energy, whatever that is in your understanding. We all have a different understanding of that, whether you're an atheist or not. And the idea was, sacred singing too, is my intention is always to tell people, look, if we use the word God at any time, feel free to replace it with the word love. It doesn't, to me, it's the same. Whether you use the word light or love or God or Lord or Brahma or God, whatever it is, it's all the same source. It's all that source energy. And the idea is that source energy is what we are a part of, what has our highest interest at heart, what wants to bless us, wants to heal us. It's a benevolent source of energy that connects us all. And I think ultimately we all want to resonate on a higher level. So with sacred singing, we just kind of get an opportunity to bring our vibrations to a higher level. And when we do it collectively, it's very powerful.
Presence, how does somebody find out about your events, you know, the sacred singing or working with you as a channel and healer and light and all the incredible things you do as a Reiki master, as an energy healer? I know you're even master in tarot. And so for anybody out there that really wants an unlimited life and wants to open those doors or those channels to their heart or to their lives, how does somebody find you and work with you?
Well, that's a beautiful question, because that's the one thing that I've always been a little, not been one of my strengths. I've always been a word of mouth person, so I have like a simple phone number that people call.
That's perfect.
I mean, my cell phone, which is 310 Peter Pan without the N for Neverland, as I say, because it's easy to remember. Then I have a 24/7 voicemail that I've had for many years, which is I can give you that if you'd like it.
Sure, I would love that.
That's 310-859-5509. And that's just a number that somebody can call at any time, day or night. You don't have to worry about waking me up, those messages, and return those calls. I'm eventually going to hook up a pager to it as well, because I kind of like that old-fashioned thing, and I don't like to always be having people call my cell phone. Plus, it fills up, and then I can't answer the call. So I do get unlimited messages. And then
that's
I am
so beautiful.
Facebook,
you have an yes.
I was going to say my Facebook page is connected to what will eventually be a website, which is sacredsinging.la or sacredsinging.la. so that's www.sacredsinging.la or LA is going, eventually will be a website, but right now it's just a link to my Facebook page, and there I always put events on there. So those are probably the two best ways to get a hold of me. I would say you could email me, but I always have about 6,000 unread emails at a time, and I miss a lot of them. So it's not the most one of the things I refuse is to let technology take over my life to the point where I have to spend hours in front of a computer. So eventually I hope to get an assistant to help with that.
It's so funny because the same for me. I'm not an email person, and people are like, "Didn't you get my email?" I'm like, "Gosh, you know, let me know that you sent me something, because this
I know
thing
that's
I
what
have
I always tell people,
like 6,000
or whatever. Call, text me, and let me know it's there. If you don't get a response, then please just let me know, because don't assume that just because you sent it, I saw it."
Right. So I love that you live in my world of energy and light. It's so beautiful. And then I also know that you're the CEO and founder of Wellbeing Works.
Wellbeing Works. Yeah. I mean, I have. How did you know about that?
Because I'm psychic.
You've done your research. I do a lot of things. I've been founding a lot of things over time. I'm often into things before they become popular, like yoga. And I actually was a member of Agape when it was 12 people. And I tend to be into things before they get going, and often find myself being somewhat instrumental in supporting them to continue to grow. And then as they grow, I lose my interest and go on to something else. So I'm often an initiator in these things getting going, and then I leave them, and then other people kind of take over and grow them to a much bigger degree. So probably you will see a lot more sacred singing things coming up with different people doing them and them getting more and more popular. I think it's been around for, it's not something new, but for some reason I seem to have become more associated with it being out in the world. My intention ultimately would be to have hundreds and hundreds of people in the room doing that. I think it would blow the top off, like as far as creating a vibration on the planet that would really raise the energy in a very powerful and positive way. I mean, we are such powerful healers when we vibrate at a higher level. And really, ultimately, that's all we need to do is keep our vibration in a positive place. And the Wellbeing Works is, I have a great passion for health and nutrition and for any forms of how, as you say, living the ultimate life or the infinite life, or how do you say it, the unlimited life?
Unlimited life, yes.
Unlimited life. I mean, to me, Wellbeing Works is just that, you know, wellbeing is at the heart of, if we make that our intention, then it's just aligning our body, mind, and spirit with that intention and doing the things that will bring that about. And I am having to rewalk that journey myself now at a snail pace, where before I was kind of, I think, catapulted into it. And now I'm learning it in a very different way, and it's been a very humbling journey. But yeah, I also work with people if they choose to work on other levels. But I take on very few clients these days. My main work right now has been more with the sacred singing. I will do Gus channeling if somebody is interested in that. I will do readings for somebody if somebody's interested in that. I do ear coning clearing sessions on occasion still. But I can only take on a few people here and there. I think the only area where I can take on more is when I do Gus channeling, because that is something that also feeds me, and it's an being in that energy is beneficial to me. And it's a hard
we
one.
We should
I'm
do a
Gus
channeling party for you.
I was thinking I have done that in all parts of the world other than in Los Angeles, and it's funny to me because of all the places you would think that doing channeling with a teddy bear in L.A. would be the most accepted place, right? Because we do so many nutty things here that aren't happening in, like, the South. But I've done it in, like, conservative areas more so than I've done it. And I've never done a group in Los Angeles. I've only done private. And I don't tell people that I do it either. It's something I don't tell very many people. So the fact that you brought it up, I bless you for that.
Because I have a new goal to put that together for you. And then also, I had a quick question too when you're talking about the yoga. Because as you're talking about sacred singing, I sort of see you as a conductor for the universe. You really, it's like there are the bassoons and the violins and the cello, and everybody has their own part and their own music. And so I had two questions. One with the yoga, that I saw that you do something called stick yoga. And that's
yeah,
I see you as a conductor with the baton. I would love to know what that is.
Oh, stick yoga is absolutely wonderful. There's a man named Dr. Arthur Fagenholtz. I never get his last name right, but he's actually the creator of stick stretching or stick yoga or stick stretching yoga. If you look up stickstretching.com, he's actually doing a workshop this weekend, and he may come to the sacred singing. If I can get him to come, I will announce him and tell people about him, because he's really, I think he'll be done with the workshop by then. But he's a chiropractor, and he found that using sticks to exercise and to do yoga helps with our alignment, because there's something about being rooted to the earth and using the stick. And he's found all these amazing ways to work out. And he's very childlike in his exploration. You know, he said, look, you can do stand up ab work, and he gets very excited about it. And he really encourages and supports his students to explore and take it to other levels and figure out something else that he hasn't taught them. And it's a very creative kind of yoga. But many of the poses that are yoga poses work very, very well with the stick, because they help your alignment. They help keep you from going out of alignment, because you're aligning yourself with a stick. And it's really a great, I think it's going to be more and more popular. More and more people will probably use it. I wanted to create a stick yoga class in Santa Monica, but right now I'm just not organized enough for that. I have too many other things going on, so I'm not doing that. It's a really, really fun way of working.
That's beautiful. And when I'm thinking about you as well with the baton as the conductor, I guess one of my last questions for you too is, do you have to be able to sing to do sacred singing? Because people are out there listening, so okay.
No, you do not. As a matter of fact, I always encourage people to come regardless of whether they sing. Very often people who say they don't sing and don't think they can sing, we have many testimonies of people comments that people have written in that they said, you know, I didn't want to come because I don't sing. And they ended up having an amazing time. And sometimes people find their voice, and sometimes people choose just to be quiet and just to listen and just to meditate in the space. And that's totally fine. My encouragement with people who come who are not singing along is that they at least either say or think the words that we sing, so that they're connected to the energy and the affirmations, or that they enter a meditative space and just receive it. That's my encouragement. But you do not have to be able to sing, and we have a loud enough sound blanket that you don't have to be embarrassed if you can't sing. And there's going to be enough singers in the audience that will drown out some of the non-singers.
I love it.
Matter of fact,
it's so
once
beautiful.
In a while you get somebody who's very confident about their abilities as a singer who doesn't sing well. But in a way, I love those people because they make everybody else feel comfortable. Once in a while, we have to put them in the back and say, could you just keep it down a little bit? Listen to the voices around you. That's the key.
That's so cute. And then one of my last questions I always love to ask my guests is, since this show is called Unlimited Life, mm-hmm. Unlimited Living, what does leading an unlimited life mean to you?
Beautiful question. Well, it's the ultimate form of being a channel. I think if we can connect to our higher good, if our intention can be to connect to the greater good, then living an unlimited life or being having an unlimited experience means that there's no belief systems that aren't really ours to begin with that are blocking us. There's nothing that is stopping us from living what our infinite potential is. And our potential is, I believe, and I'm having had a visceral experience of ascension, both in dreams and meditation, I believe that we can turn into light if our vibration, if we get vibrationally high enough. And to me, that to me represents the ultimate thing of being unlimited, coming in and out of creation at will, turning into light, you know, being able to heal any form of illness by raising our vibration. I mean, it's a field of infinite possibilities where everything is possible.
What a beautiful answer. You are so extraordinary and so blessed and so gifted to have crossed your path and to have you in my life and for the world to have you here. And I'm so glad that as you were that little child saying, what did I do? Why did I choose this world? For the rest of us that are here, we're so pleased you chose this world. You are such a grand gift to this planet and this world and this life. And so
thank you so much.
Absolutely. So honored and so blessed to have you here. We look forward to having you on again and for everybody out there to align to your divine, to your consciousness, for channeling, for healing, for enlightenment, to meet the little Gus teddy bear and to hear what he has to say and to open your heart and your spirit and soul to the sacred singing. And I implore you to find presence because she really is the doorway to an unlimited life. Thank you for being with us. Wow.
Thank you so much. I'm very, very honored. You're a great gift, and what you're doing is an enormous gift. I'm sure your listeners are extremely grateful to have you do this program for them.
Presence, thank you. And for all of you that are out there that have been writing diligently everything that she said, stick yoga, Gus channeling, ear toning, healing, Reiki, all of that. That
oh, and Shaker singing at the Quaker House. I forgot to say it's at the Quaker House
in
Santa Quaker Monica.
At the Quaker House, which is in Santa Monica. And when is that? Tomorrow, which is Sunday.
And 5:30 is a community potluck. 6:00, we start the program with bowls, with a sound bath, and then 6:30 is a sacred singing. You can come for any part or all of it.
That's beautiful. And for those of you that are downloading this and listening to this and it's past Sunday and you're now banging your head against the wall, don't do that. Because another sacred singing will be coming up, and you can find Presence as she was sharing on Facebook, or you can go to 310 Peter Pan. Or what was your number? Your 24-hour hotline number.
Oh, and 310-859-5509.
Absolutely, and she will get back to you as far as the next sacred singing event or how to work with her, which is truly a divine gift. And to get a copy of today's show, since you've been writing like crazy and you want all of this information, you just simply text your 55678, and the message is Nicole. So send a text to 55678, Nicole, and you can download a copy of today's show right into your phone or any mobile device and listen to Presence as you're leading your life and living your life and just download her energy and her love and her grand gifts and the presence of who she is. So thank you.
Thank you.
Wow, what a beautiful, extraordinary, unbelievably remarkable guest. And I know firsthand of her work and her light and her energy. And what a clear channel and beautiful, beautiful doorway to energy, to healing, to love, to consciousness, to vibration, even in the sacred singing. And so just fabulous having her with us today, and I look forward to having her on again. And so for myself and for Presence, we both are wishing you a very unlimited life, an unbridled life, a happy, glorified, blissful life in which all your wishes and dreams come true.